Thank you. When I was invited to give this lecture by TED, and then immediately after, Bill Johnson wrote me an email asking me to give this lecture, an expository lecture. I was a bit reluctant because I saw there are people in the audience who heard me already talk about lambda P sets, and some of them I can think easily of two at least who know probably this stuff better than I do. So politely I refused, and then Bill applied some amusing methods of pressure, and then I tried to resist on the same grounds, and then he said, well, you should speak for the student and not for, and he mentioned two or three names which I'll not give them the pleasure now to mention. And so we agreed that I will speak for the students, and I apologize for boring those two or three or four or five people that know this stuff. I'm sure in the 30 years that I work in Banach Spaces or more, they at least once or twice bored me, so it just goes back. Now, why the topic of lambda P? Lambda P, actually, the person who led me to certain fascination with this subject is Haskell Rosenthal. And the story is more or less that when I finished school, or what's called the university, I had a great respect for the numbers 0, 1, and infinity from calculus, from linear algebra, and then for LP I realized that there is this P equal to 2. 2 has a spatial value, so it's like north-west marine drive and southwest. It's P larger than 2, P less than 2. And then was also Grothendieck constant, who had a spatial role, but people said Grothendieck is a genius, so he had this constant, which now it's Nicole works on computing her, worked on computing the precise value. And then comes, I got a paper from Rosenthal in which he claimed something about LP, P equal to 4 over 3. This looked to me, I don't believe in miracles, and somehow this looked to me, he proved a certain statement about L 4 over 3. So I tried to dismiss this thing, but then it was based on a result of Walter Rudin. I went to the library and try to read and read with difficulty the paper of Walter Rudin, and paper of Walter Rudin was fascinating. He was proving something for 4, 6, 8, but especially for 4, and apparently using some arithmetic properties of the numbers, and this looked to me like a miracle, which indeed, how come that for 4 over 3 Rosenthal proves this statement, and for 6 over 5, maybe for 6 over 5 it's true, for 5 over 17, 17 over, no, that's, okay, pi over 3, this is not true, or something like this. And that's how I became interested in this. Now, the end of the story is that, so this was a very glamorous problem which many people were attracted to it, and considering that at the intersection of harmonic analysis and number theory. So anything which has to do with number theory, of course, makes it into real, into movies, and to literature, like whiles with more serious things. And then what happened, this story has a sort of happy ending that came Bourguin and removed the glamour from this, so it was not 4 over 3, it's any number, and removed the glamour from this problem, and he provided with a proof which was very complicated, but he explained to me in detail, and was based on part of the arguments was from some joint papers that we had, and I understood, and then the proof is far from being trivial. And the proof, not only that he removed the glamour from the number theory, but he also removed the glamour from the characters, and it became something for orthogonal systems of a certain kind. And that's more or less the short story which I'll try to describe you in the next few. So, as I said, I'll try to be quite elementary. And so I will remind some facts about the characters. I will not do the thing in for abelian groups, but I will do in on the circle. So, you know, some facts which are very well known, and I apologize again for boring. Okay. So this was the stick that I needed, because I know Yoram did exactly the same thing, but I always try to follow him. And okay, so this is, so first fact is that
no, here
I think it's okay. First thing is that first observation is that the characters form a complete orthonormal system in L2 of the circle, and they form a basis if P is between 1 and infinity. This is because the Ries projection is bounded. Another observation, which is very important in the on the conceptual level, is that if you take the first n characters in LP, they are uniformly isomorphic to LPN, but this is not a trivial fact. It's not the basis. They do not form certainly the basis. It's not equivalent to the unit vector basis of the LPN. And the fact which is very well known in harmonic analysis is that contrary to the behavior of the characters when they are all between 1 and n, if you take only lacunary, like I said, you take a thin set of characters, then they behave differently. First of all, lacunary means that the jump is, say, 2 or 3, or nk plus 1 is larger than a certain q larger than 1, then nk, and the behavior of the characters in the behavior of the characters in LP, old-fashioned, never worked. So the characters, if you take a thin set of characters, they generate a Hilbert space in LP, and at the end of the rod in L infinity of the circle, they generate an L1. Okay, so these are the two statements, that in LP, for every P, there is a constant CP, which in some sense characterizes this Sidon set that will be mentioned here, just very briefly, a set which satisfies the second assumption that you see here is a Sidon set, and as far as I know, these sets are not yet characterized. Okay, so there are two situations here. One situation, if you take all the characters and start moving with P, what you get moves together with P. The second situation, which is completely opposite, is that of the lacunary sets, where you can move together with P, and the nature of the subspace does not change. There is this constant which behaves like square root of P and changes, but that's a different thing. So Rudin wanted to see, to see if there are other sets than thin sets which satisfies the assumption that you see here, the Hilbertian assumption, and he introduced the notion of the LP set. The lambda is an LP set of integers. Lambda is always a set of integers. Is a lambda P set if on the span of I and X, e to the power I and X, n in lambda, the LP norm is equivalent to S norm for some S less than P. Now, so if you like, a lacunary set is a lambda P, but the problem, of course, is if there are others, and I'll come immediately to the problem. Now, one observation which is important here is that this S that appears here is a fiction, because if one S is good, then all the S's are good. So if you use Helder in a very non-clever way, you get that if you have a lambda p set defined with S, because you notice the lambda p is not defined with the, it's not a lambda p S set. And this is due to the fact that one S is good to ensure that all the S's. And the question that Rudin asked is the following. Is every lambda p set also a lambda p plus epsilon set for all epsilon larger than zero? In other words, the question is, can you, I mean, if you take the sin sets, the lacunary sets, you can move to the right, you can move to the left, you remain with the same, basically, you have the same subspace. If you take all the characters, then they change. So what he wanted to know, if there are other sets which behave in some sense like the, for the lacunary sets, and he wanted to say if this can be done for every P. Now, now this would have been a normal problem in Banach space theory, or it's actually a problem of harmonic theory, harmonic analysis. But for the, so maybe one remark which I want to make before to understand that the problem is completely different, different for p less than 2 and p larger than 2. And now please notice that if you have p larger than 2, a lambda p set generates always a Hilbert space, because between p which is larger than 2 and 1, all the numbers give you the same subspace, or the characters generate, in particular they generate in L2, in L2 they generate of course a Hilbert space. So you get, if p is between 1 and 2, this need not be so, but apparently, I really don't know, it may be so. This is a completely different behavior. Now, Rudin, now, why all the excitement about this problem? I mentioned before the result of Haskell. The problem would have been a normal problem in harmonic analysis. Well, you have for P, you want to know if it's also lambda P plus epsilon. But for the result of Rudin, which really now it's, of course, after this was settled, nobody admits that he was excited, but the point is that everybody was extremely excited, because Rudin proved by using arithmetic problems of natural numbers that there are lambda 4 sets which are not lambda 4 plus epsilon, and the same for lambda p sets with p being an even number. So, in other words, if you have a set of characters, you can find here a set of, for every P, which is 4, 6, 8, and so on, you can find a set of characters which is gives you Hilbert in that space, of course. But if you move a bit to the right, no matter how little you move to the right, you don't get a Hilbert space. Now, anything which has to do with number theory, I explained already, excites the people, and there was a great deal of excitement, in addition to the fact that this led, the first application that I heard was that of Rosenthal in Banach space theory. It doesn't matter what he proved then. The point is that when you make such a statement like, I can prove the statement for lambda p n with p equal to 4 over 3. Why 4 over 3? Probably you notice that 4 over 3 is the conjugate index of 4. That's the whole reason. And so on and so forth. For the conjugate index of 6 and so forth. This is an excitement statement. I mean, why 4 over 3 and not 4 over 3 plus epsilon? So, now, some of the results, there is for p less than 2, the problem was settled in a sort of trivial way. I mean, the trivial, the problem uses, the problem was solved by Bacelis and Ebenstein in 1974. They proved for p less than 2, you can always move to the right. So in other words, you cannot have a lambda p set which is not lambda p plus epsilon. On the contrary, anything which is lambda p, you can move to the right. The proof is not big deal, but it uses what's called popularly the Rosenthal lemma, which Rosenthal has as a result which is very well known today. It's already what's called classical, which says basically that if you have a subspace of LP which does not contain disjoint, essentially disjoint functions, you can move it to the right. And by using this fact, it's basically an observation. So you have that the set of all the P's, the set of all the P's between 1 and 2, where L1 on lambda is equal to LP of lambda, it's an open interval. Okay? And I don't know, maybe it goes all the way to the 2. It's not known that it's not known what is the lambda P set for P less than 2, so maybe there are none, maybe only. It's not clear what is. I mean. No, 2 I'll talk. About 2 I'll talk immediately. I don't know. No, that's what I said. I don't know. And the only reason that I didn't say this very solidly is because I was afraid that maybe in the last month somebody solved this problem. But yes, I don't know. Nobody, as far I know, knows. And it could be that there are none. Now, that much about. So the problem was completely exciting, and people hoped to solve it for the characters in one way or the other, probably in a positive way. And then that was in a period when I worked with Bourguin, and one day he comes and told me that he solved, always had a way of presenting the things in a super modest way, which of course is the best way to get compliments. And so he said, well, by the way, you know, something like, by the way, I solved the lambda P problem. And in why it even didn't realize that he means in positive. And then what he solved, basically he showed that for every P larger than 2, there is a lambda P set which is not a lambda P plus epsilon. Now, as I already mentioned, Bourguin's solution has nothing to do with number theory, and it applies in some sense not only to the trigonometric system, but also to any system UN, which is orthonormal in L2, and at least for this lecture, the important thing I would like to mention, which is uniformly bounded in L infinity. Because I would like to present at the end some results which this condition does not happen. Okay. Now, I will explain to you basically the ideas of the proof. This is a big cheat because I will explain you in detail, except that one of the items will be fact 1, fact 2, fact 3, I don't know how many facts, except that fact 2 contains 95% of the proof, so therefore this simplifies, and of course this is, so it's not, but at least you could get the idea of what's the idea. By the way, this is a part which is in the spirit of the asymptotic theory of which we were told by Joran that we have to mention in our lecture. That okay, so the fact 1 is a fact which is again very well known.
The question I have, what part of this talk is not in the spirit of the You will mention.
I will mention. This is fact 4. Yes, fact 4 is not in the spirit, and this is why I said, in some sense, this is the difference that the local part works for any orthonormal system. The extension to the infinite sets uses the harmonic analysis. Of course. But, like Johnson said, I don't talk for you. You know? So the first fact is a fact which is a very simple fact, is that a space LPN contains good Hilbert spaces of dimension n to the power 2 over p, and that this is the largest dimension that you can get in LPN. So therefore, what you can hope is to get, if you have a set, you see, there's a big difference between the lambda P problem and the existence of subspaces, that you can find subspaces. This is one thing. That here you want to get a subset of characters which generates a Hilbert. So this is a completely different situation. So it could be that there are only thin sets or logarithmic sets. So this is the first observation. This observation has a set which is lambda p should satisfy. If you have a set lambda which is in 1 to n, in the first n integers, the cardinality of this set should be less than n to the power 2 over p. Of course, a priori it's not clear if there are lambda p sets of maximal dimension, and this is the fact 2, which is 95% of Bourgain proof, and the proof it's really a probabilistic Banach space proof. And he proved, and here comes the surprise, which in the beginning everybody was in a shock, that not only you don't have to take characters, you take any orthonormal system in L2, which is uniformly bounded in L infinity, and then for every p larger than 2, here another surprise. Not only that the proof works for any orthonormal system which is bounded, not only that, but any set practically, a random set, so a generic set that you take lambda of size n to the power 2 over p, is such a set which gives you a Hilbert. In other words, therefore, it's forced to be. So, in particular, there are. What I wanted to say. I don't know what I wanted to say. So, what I wanted to say is one observation that this is less known, but I didn't write it. So, if you take here, for example, the characters, all the characters from 1 to n, say, or from 0 to n minus 1, you can find what the result that I just presented. You can find a set I n lambda x n in lambda, lambda of size n to the power 2 over p. We are talking about a p larger than 2, and this set of characters generates a Hilbert space. But not only that, I said, you get it in random. In other words, almost every set does this thing. Now, this has a consequence which Jean minimalized, and I want to mention it. The consequence of this set, which the truth is I don't know an application, is that you can split all the characters between 0 and n minus 1 in sets I and x n in lambda 1, union, direct sum, if you like, direct sum I and x n in lambda. Now, the number here will be n divided by 1 to the power 2 over p, and each lambda I are lambda p sets. In other words, if you like, you can talk about a paving of the characters with lambda p sets, and each one has the maximal size. Okay, so this is... Yeah, it's a union, no. It's a union. Okay, fact three is a triviality. Fact three is, I mentioned for another reason. So in other words, what this says is that if you take a lambda, a set which generates, if you take p between 2 and r, so r is p plus epsilon, then if you take a lambda set of dimension, what I want to say here, if you take a maximal size, which is n to the power 2 over p, this set of characters cannot generate a Hilbert in LR because of the size. Simply in the largest set that could be a lambda R set, has cardinality n to the power 2, at most n to the power 2 over r. So you cannot move Such a lambda p set cannot be moved to the right because of size. Now, so if you like, the finite dimensional, the local version of lambda p, it's already solved, and it's solved for p larger than 2. Now, I would like to make an observation about p equal to 2. For p equal to 2, there is a problem here. If you want to use the same kind of argument, it's trivial. If you take all the cardinals, all the characters between 1 and n, they form Hilbert in L2, and if you move them to the right, of course, they will not be Hilbert. So from this point of view, they behave exactly like this thing, except that all the characters do not form lambda p set because you don't have anything less than 2 which will give you Hilbert. So therefore, here, this is the problem. Moreover, so the problem for p equal to 2 is still open, and this is one of the most difficult problems. What I would like to mention is that, if you like, you can produce here sets. You can easily produce sets which are lambda 2 in the first n characters of size as close to n, like n to the power 1 minus epsilon. Simply, you take a p larger than 2, you construct a lambda p, and you can produce. You cannot expect to obtain characters. You cannot obtain a lambda 2 set of dimension cn. The reason has to do with Semeredi. You can deduce this by using Semeredi and the Dirichlet kernel, and I don't want to go into details, but if you have a set of characters which is a lambda 2 and of size cn, it should be Hilbert in L1 and Hilbert in L2. Since it has this size cn, by Semeredi you'll find arithmetic progression, and then it shows that in L1 it's of size k over log k or something like this. Now, fact 4 is the fact which...
what is conjecture about n over log n?
Conjectures... I don't know, you know. I think Jean believes that it's true, at least he worked for equal to 2, but you know, once you work a year or two and you cannot solve, you come up with a conjecture that, not that you are wrong, but the thing is not. I really don't know. I believe that he believes that it's true for p. He tried to use Orlitz functions and this kind, but I don't know. Now, the fact 4 is the only part which should contradict what Vitali tried to push, that everything in the world is asymptotic number theory. How do you get an infinite set here? What? What? I have the mic, you know, so whatever I say, it's registered. What you say, it's not heard, so remember this. Always. Remember this. Remember this, that what you say is other than nothing, and what I'm saying is very clearly marked there. Okay, so contrary to what Vitali said, the fact 4, it's a fact of harmonic analysis, and it's a result of Littlewood, and uses a result of Pally and Littlewood. So you, using fact 1, you construct between 2 to the power k to the 2 to the power k plus 1, a set sk of size that you see here, it should be 4 to the power k over p, which is lambda p set for any p larger than 2. And as you see, the distance between the span of this lambda p set in Lr and in Lp for r larger goes to infinity as k goes to infinity. And here comes the result of Pally and Littlewood, which is very well known, that, you know, if you take in Lp the sum of characters from 1 to infinity, you can split into groups between two powers of consecutive powers of 2 to the k, and you get these things. So from this, you know, if you put together all the sets SK, you get a set which is a lambda P set, because of this this thing tells you that the set continues to be becomes an infinite set, a lambda P set, an infinite set. But if you move to LR R larger than P, already at each level K, you get something that tends to infinity, and therefore this solves completely.
But if you go to 1, then it breaks down.
Yes, yes. 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 But no, but this suffices to get. So this is... Now, there is a point here to mention here, that if you have, so what I said so far was referring to orthogonal, orthonormal systems which are uniformly bounded in L infinity. Now, it's very important to understand that L infinity is the end of the road. So if you take a set for the characters, the set where the characters are bounded... Thank you. So if you take 2 and here infinity, the characters are bounded in the closed set. This is important to mention from what I want. In the closed set, the closed interval, if you like, in quotation marks, between infinity, because it's bounded already in L infinity, so it's bounded in everything in between. Now, if you take an orthonormal, so with this more or less I finished the part that I wanted to mention about Bourguin's work and Rudin's problem. The rest I want to mention a few results which are together with Calton, and which in no way should be considered as the same, don't want to imply that it's the same order of magnitude. Definitely the results, though they are far from being trivial, are little of the work of Bourguin. By the way, there is another proof of Talagran. Maybe 2 remarks before I go to the next subject. The first remark, which is sort of ironical, is that what was exciting in the beginning, what excited me, is the story with L lambda 4 being the first case, which is lambda 4 and not lambda 4 plus epsilon, so 4 played a spatial role. Now it turns out that in the proof of Bourguin, 4 also plays a spatial role. Somehow, for some reasons that I never understood, probably Bourguin understands, the proof is done first between 2 and 4, and then by completely separate argument between 4 and infinity. So somehow 4... The shadow of 4 continues to. Now, there's another proof which Talagran produced a few years later, and if I quote, he wanted to pay a sort of compliment to Bourguin and said that only a madman or a genius like Bourguin could have produced a proof like that, which is a translation of the fact I don't understand the proof of Bourguin. And then he produced another proof by completely different means, which I think that Rudelson understands it quite well. And
I should mention here that Gluskin worked on the problem, and Gluskin observed that Majorizing measures of Talagran has wrong. And Talagran visited Telemir, Gluskin explains that he cannot finish, and you had the paper which you mentioned.
We all live on each other's ideas,
Yes.
So anyway, so he has a proof that he believes that Talagran believes that his proof it's one. The proof is very natural. It actually produces lambda p sets in the space LP infinity in a very natural way. Unfortunately, LP infinity is not LP infinity is not LP. So then you pay a certain unnatural price to switch from. You present the proof, you present the natural proof for LP infinity, and then say, well, but that part is the annoying part. Anyway, I'm not in a position to make justice and give grades for the whose proof is better, but at least I understood very well the proof of Bourgain and not the other one. Now, the proof of Bourgain breaks if the supremum of UN is not infinity, but as he mentions as an observation in his paper, and actually we checked once when he visited Jerusalem, what happens, you need a certain condition. If you take disjoint functions, you cannot expect to get any lambda p, because disjoint functions will not behave in LP, p larger than 2, differently than LP. So therefore, you cannot use, say, a Haar system or something like this.
Second 2 is Q, yes?
Yes, this is Q and not 2, but this is my... So if you take P between 2 and Q, P has the same role like before. Q has the role of the bound, and you assume that you have boundedness in LQ instead of L infinity, then the same argument produces a random set of size lambda equal to n to the power alpha, where alpha is this number. Now, I'm sure all of you checked if Q is equal to infinity, the number coincides, then you see it's 1 over p divided by 1 over 2, and this is n to the power 2 over p, and so everything. And Agaev, I learned from Vitaly, always have to mention a Russian in this business, so Agaev proved that n to the power alpha is maximal, so the same argument can be done if you have a system. And here comes the interesting situation, which I would like to stress, because this is the... What is the strange situation? Like I said, for characters, you have a closed set where this is bounded. Now, what happens if you have, say, the situation the following? Here you have 2. Here you have a number Q, large Q, and here you have a Q, and here you have a P. Now, if you use boundedness in this LP, you will not get a set of maximal size, because you realize that if you switch to a Q larger, a little bit larger, you'll increase the size. So no matter how close you come to large Q, you cannot get the largest. You cannot get the maximal size. Now, if you are lucky and the UN is bounded in LQ, and sup UN in LR is infinity for R larger than Q, then the argument of Bourgain will give you a maximal set, because you have the end of the rod. Like infinity was the end of the rod, here Q is the end of the rod. So you see, this looks a very unnatural situation. And then, a few years ago when I was in Missouri, tried to check what happens with the only, what are the orthonormal system that all of us know, Haar system. This doesn't work because this has disjoint functions, characters. Bourgain took care of them, and then what I know is Legendre, so started checking Legendre, and what happens with Legendre is a very strange situation. What happens with Legendre is the situation which I described, where you have for UN in Q, I'll tell you the Q for in a second, there is at the end of the rod, the Legendre system is infinity, and before that you get less. So this is a completely different situation, and so this is in green here. So it's a strange situation, if you like, where UN is uniformly bounded for every Q less than large Q, but in large Q is infinity. Then a random set of size n to the power alpha cannot be maximal, because you can always improve the Q. You have to use a Q, a small Q, and no matter the closer you are to large Q, the larger is the size. Now, so strangely, this occurs for Legendre polynomials and for some ultraspherical polynomials, which I'll mention just to. Now, I mean, if you do Gram-Schmidt for 1 xx squared and so on, and if you use this measure, 1 minus x squared to lambda minus 1 half, you get the so-called ultraspherical. You probably are more used to Jacobi, which are use 1 minus x to a certain power and 1 minus 1 plus x to a different power. Here we use the same, and these are called ultraspherical. Now, for lambda equal to, so you get a scale for using all these lambdas, you get a scale of orthonormal polynomials, which perhaps is interesting because if you take lambda equal to 1 half, you kill this measure and you get the Lebesgue measure and then you get the Legendre. And if you take lambda equal to 0, you get the Chebyshev polynomials. Now, Chebyshev polynomials are very cute because Chebyshev polynomials, if you put x equal to cosine theta using the fact that cosine is between minus 1 and 1, you get cosine of n theta divided by its norm, which is another way of saying that you get the characters, the even characters. So if you like, this scale of polynomials, the ultraspherical polynomials, contains in one place the Legendre and another place the characters. And so it's natural to study this thing. And now there are a few things which you can find from book of Sege and the Capit from there, which tell you all kind of, I mean, there is something which is very annoying. There is something very annoying. People normally denote by Pn the Legendre or the ultraspherical, with the normalization P1 1 equal to 1. Now we are using the norm 1 in L2 normalization, so you have to play and be careful. This is extremely boring, but you do these computations. And what I want to mention is the following thing. So maybe this is interesting to mention, that asymptotically, here asymptotically means in the at 1. Yes, thank you. At 1, phi and lambda behaves like n to the power lambda, at 1 and at minus 1. You know, this starts at n to the power lambda, it starts oscillating. Of course, it's a classical exercise that they have n distinct zeros. You use roll and things like this. These are exercises nice for students. And so you have all kind of things. So the bottom line, which I'll not bore you with the details, is that you can find a value, a critical value, r lambda, which is 2 plus 1 over lambda, so that, and here comes the strange situation that I mentioned. For lambda larger than 0, this is the index, you get the supremum, it's bounded if r is between 2 and r lambda. Now notice, for Legendre, lambda was 1 half to kill the measure. So you get 2 plus 1 over 1 half, you get 4. So what happens here is that for Legendre, the situation is the following. For Legendre, if this is, for any q, if you take a p, you can use for Legendre, which will be what is phi to 1 half, this was the stupid notation that I used. If you take any q between 2 and 4 until 4, excluding 4, this is bounded. This is bounded. But if you take supremum in phi to the power x in 4, this is infinite. So what happens is that the set here is an open set, and you have difficulties in constructing. I will go, so this is mentioned here. So for Legendre polynomial, this is what happens. I mentioned that in 4 is the end of the road for Legendre polynomials. This is a fact which is very well known. So, for lambda equal to zero, that is for the characters, you have boundedness also at the end of the rod, the fact that you knew before. So you have a different situation for lambda larger than zero and lambda less than zero. Okay, just to mention that other people studied this, and for example, Pollard proved that this ultraspherical polynomials form a basis in LP with the proper measure, also if P is between 2 and, and R lambda, but of course you cannot do anything in R lambda. Now, what I want just to mention, the result with Carlton, like I said, the proof is not trivial, it's far from being trivial, but it's not the same order of magnitude as Bourguignon-Singh. We proved this for Legendre and for ultraspherical polynomials, and the theorem basically says what is written here. That if you fix a lambda between 0 and infinity, like think about lambda equal to 1 half, it should be larger than 0 because this is an interesting situation. If you take P between 2 and the end of the rod, which is R lambda, which is 2 plus 1 over lambda, which will be 4 for Legendre, then you get the same result, that for a finite set F, if you denote this is the constant of lambda, P lambda, basically you get the same result. Here is given in detail the same type of result like Bourguignon. You get, in other words, if you like, I mean, the result is stated here with all the details. A generic set F in the first and numbers of size n to the power alpha. Alpha this time depends on lambda and p, of course, is this number that you see here, which is this is a lambda p lambda set for ultra spherical polynomials. Now, there is a way to maybe. I will stop here because it's getting technical. I should mention that the proof is something strange about the proof. The proof uses Bourguignon's result, but in a strange way. It's not that it's you take the proof of Bourguignon and you see that here you do this modification or here you do that modification. What happens is that you use the argument with Carlton, like I said, yields the maximal size n to the power 4 over p minus 1. This is the number that you get, which is the maximal size that you can get here for the Legendre. And it's based on the fact, which is quite non-trivial, that a set is lambda p for the Legendre if and only if a certain operator is bounded. And in this way, I mean, you know, at a certain moment it becomes hard to explain, especially that my time is over. So what I want to say is that the proof uses, quotes, if you like, the result by transferring the problem from Legendre for ultraspherical to the usual problem of Bourguignon, but for a different set. So I think with this I will stop here.
Thank you very much. Rudin construction.
Yes, this is
the random set, which is plentiful. It is still, you do not know any.
This happens, you know, many other theorems. I don't have to remind you.
Now, that using these other polynomials, you also.
You are in the same situation.
You are in the same situation that.
Yeah, this you know about everybody, but you don't have any friend. And,
okay.
Yes.
Well, since you forgot and I remember just now, I'll say that I did this. Because I could prove resistance.
I didn't forget. I'll never forget what you proved. I simply didn't want to give you this. I didn't forget what you proved. I remember exactly, but I didn't want to give you an extra quotation. You got enough.
Subspace of LP, which is not complemented for all T between 1 and 4/3.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I remember.
Something about these particular things do not have this obstruction, right, of the maximal business. So, in a sense, it's a vague question if you can do this for all P, where you see what I'm trying to say. The reason why it's uncomplemented is not because it just doesn't have anything in it. The dual doesn't have any Euclidean subspace in it that's big enough. Whereas this is not the reason for these even things. None of you.
But now you can use this and do not only for...
It's not because of size of Euclidean subspace in Dvoretsky theorem. For P-less than 2, you have too big
subspaces. No, I understand this, but
reasons are very clear today.
You can still ask if they are uncomplemented things which don't have this construction.
There are different constructions, yes.
Yes. I should say that I didn't realize this, but... I think it was Yoram and people of Zippin, maybe, I don't know, but I got a message from them saying that follows immediately there is a subspace isomorphic to little LP, which is uncomplemented to little LP by the same construction. And again, this is P greater than 1 less than 4/3. So all of those things were sort of exciting things.
Yeah, no, I remember I saw that you are a genius with this thing. Then I saw that Rudin is a genius.
Ask him, is there any non-commutative
reason?
Sure
there is, but now I need
to. He is too.
Now, if there is no question, I just want to say that I just realized at this meeting, it occurred to me when Zeisler talked and mentioned Markushevich basis, I just had a flash of seeing Bill Johnson 30 years ago when he came to Israel for the first time. This year in June was the last time I saw him in Israel. And he gave me his paper. He was very tense, and he gave me these papers on Markushevich basis. And what I want to mention is that I think that we miss him here at the meeting, and I wish to wish him quick recovery and hoping that he gets out of this miserable disease with a complete recovery. And really, it's somebody. I mean, all of us, we start at the age of the students, so-called students here, that as competitors, and some of us become friends, and, you know, he's really one of my best friends, and I wish him, and I hope that you join me in wishing him this recovery.
Thank you.